Welcome to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. There are some jobs that if you found out your neighbor or the kid you went to school with landed one, you'd think, this is a very solid, impressive gig. Doctors probably fit in that category, and bankers, and almost any tech job. But most jobs created by tech companies aren't what you think. They don't offer you free food, there aren't any ping pong tables. Writer Stephen Hill says sometimes they barely offer you money. Think Uber drivers and the person you hire on TaskRabbit to shovel the snow off your front steps. He argues that people with these jobs are living without a safety net. And he says the big tech companies that employ them should have to create individual security accounts to provide that cushion for their workers. Stephen Hill is a fellow at the New America Foundation and the American Academy in Berlin. He's also the author of Raw Deal, How the Uber Economy and Runaway Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. Stephen, welcome. Thanks for joining me from Berlin.
It's my great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So as I said, there's been this thinking for years that, you know, tech jobs are the good jobs. But as you've researched and written, a lot of these jobs aren't what people had hoped for.
Not at all. They're being created through the use of technology. But these jobs, you know, for example, an Uber driver is what's known as an independent contractor, or sometimes called a 1099 worker, because they use the 1099 IRS form and not the W-2 regular worker form. And these jobs, you know, you don't have any safety net or health care at all, other than what you can purchase on your own, which means it's going to be quite expensive in terms of the premiums. You have really no job security. You don't even have unemployment or injured worker compensation. So many of these independent contractors, not only Uber drivers, but lots of other contractors working in the auto industry, working some of them in the media, you know, all sorts of industries and occupations now are hiring these types of workers. And these sorts of workers, if they get injured on the job, it's on their own time and dime. They not only have to pay for their own medical bills, but if they're too injured to work, they have to somehow pay for themselves while they're out of work and don't have any income coming in. And so this is really what's happening to more and more American workers, millions of them, that should have everyone wondering about what's going to happen to the middle class if too many jobs in the U.S. become these types of jobs.
Okay, now I remember vividly a drive that I took with an Uber driver who was telling me that he really liked driving for Uber. He got to set his own schedule. When he wanted a day off, he took a day off. He didn't, you know, wait for anybody's permission. Is it possible that some of the downsides of these jobs are made up for in some of the upsides, the sort of be your own boss mentality?
Well, two things about Uber. One, in most cities, taxi service was pretty horrible. And so from the consumer point of view, you know, having an Uber at your disposal, you tap that app and the car shows up in 10 minutes, that's a great gain in terms of service. But there's a lot of downsides to that, both environmental downsides as well as labor downsides. And so in terms of, I mean, I hear a lot of drivers saying, you know, I've been driving for Uber for a few months and it's going pretty good. And the clear pattern I've seen is that, you know, if you ask that driver now, 6 months, 9 months from then, you'll get a different story, because after they've been through a pay cut from Uber, for example, in fact, Uber just did another one of its pretty much annual and sometimes semi-annual pay cuts. Drivers in certain cities are making, after you subtract Uber's cut, which is about 25 to 30% of every fare, drivers are now making about 50 cents per mile. That's less than the federal reimbursement rate for wear and tear on your vehicle. The Uber drivers, a lot of them are testifying that they're not making any more than taxi cab drivers, and some of them aren't even making minimum wage, they're claiming. So we really need an independent way to verify what these jobs are like, the quality of jobs. And I think what we'll find is that these jobs, they're okay if you're just, you know, driving it a few hours a week to make some extra money. But if you're actually trying to make a living at this, it really isn't working out very well. And in fact, Uber's own numbers show that most drivers last a year on the platform and drive 15 hours a week or less. And if this was such a great job, drivers would be driving it for longer and on an annual basis, and they'd also be driving it more hours per week.
Tell me about a person or two that you met in looking at how technology is changing you know, culture in some ways, and talk about how those people tried to put together a living.
Well, you know, besides Uber, which tends to dominate the conversation, there's a lot of other companies out there that are using this app-based type of service. So you have companies like TaskRabbit and Upwork, and a lot of them are labor brokerages where, you know, as a customer, you can go there and try to hire someone to do a service for you or to produce a good, you know, design a graphic logo or, you know, write a report or what have you. And so that means you can hire, instead of someone from the United States, you could hire someone from the Philippines or Thailand or India. And so you go on this platform and you see there are workers from the U.S. or from Canada or Australia, and they're saying, I'd like $50 to $60 for, you know, producing a logo for you. And then there's workers from India saying, I'll take $2 to $3. One woman, she was going to go to graduate school. And while she was, you know, waiting for graduate school to start, she started trying to use quite a few of these different labor brokers, TaskRabbit, Upwork, and some of the others. And, you know, and her comment sort of at the end of that process was like, I've seen beggars making more money outside of the 7-Eleven than what I was making. But, you know, these platforms almost, I mean, in fact, they say you're going to be the CEO of your own business. You're going to be your own independent entrepreneur. This is kind of the hype that they use around these platforms. You know, with Uber, you're going to be the CEO of your own driving business. But not everybody has the personality cut out to be their own self-starter entrepreneur. And this is what I think is some of the visionaries that try to push this type of sharing economy really miss that point.
But wouldn't then workers say, well, then I'm not going to use TaskRabbit. Maybe it's good for people in India who are making $2 or $3 designing a logo. And maybe $2 or $3 goes much further in India, indeed it does, than it does in New York City. But wouldn't that push Americans and Canadians and people in more expensive countries sort of off the service and say, look, this is not interesting to me. This is not a good job for me.
It does. People do try it and leave, but other people need the money. And so they do whatever they have to do. But, you know, a lot of the visionaries for this and the gurus are portraying this as the thing that's going to be how workers are going to access work in the future, that this is going to be the type of way that more and more workers are going to work. And that's where I think we have to really think hard about, is this going to work? I mean, first of all, the fact that most of these workers are contractors won't have any safety net at all. That's a big problem, because the safety net was a big part of what made the middle class the envy of the world. In addition, there's some qualities to this type of work that aren't so immediately obvious. You know, if you think about it, if you have a job, whether it's working on the radio or, you know, working for a Wall Street firm or working at a university, you go to that job 9 to 5, 8 to 4, whatever your hours are, and you're paid for every minute you have that job. Every minute you're there, even if you're just, you know, at a meeting, you're paid. If you're standing around the water cooler talking to coworkers, you're paid. Well, with this type of work, this gig economy work, you're only paid for that moment when you produce that report or you produce that graphic logo. You know, it's as if Tom Brady, a quarterback for the Patriots, if he only got paid when he threw a touchdown pass, and all the other plays and all the other training that went into that, he doesn't get paid for that. That's what working in the gig economy is like. You don't get paid, and you spend a lot of time looking for your next job, because even while you're working, you know, the job you have now, that job's going to end and you don't have anything lined up. So you're constantly looking for your next job. That's what this type of gig economy is like.
I actually talked to Robin Chase, who is the co-founder of Zipcar, which is clearly part of this sharing collaboration economy. And she told me, I'm going to play a little bit of what she said for you. She told me that she does see the ability of this economy, both for good and maybe for bad, to change the broader economy. Here's Robin Chase.
I see this has a potential to reshape our cities in a dramatically positive way. So I want to be clear that there's a potential for a very dark downside. And that's why I think we need to be paying attention to this transformation, because it's going to happen. So are we going to share these productivity gains or not?
Stephen Hill, you hear Robin Chase there talking about what she really hopes is a brilliant future, but there's that kind of note of caution, of alarm.
Yes, and it's good to hear Robin saying that, because I've heard her saying other things in the past that were more kind of, you hear a lot of happy talk from the visionaries of Silicon Valley. This is all going to be great. You're going to love it. You're going to love the products, and I'm going to make $1 billion in the process. So what could be wrong? And so I think that the more people like Robin, Chase, and others start realizing the downsides, the better chance we'll have to actually try and bring some common sense regulation. It's not like you have to bring the iron hand of government into this, but it is the case that left to their own devices, these companies will treat the workers horribly, and that's what they've been doing.
Well, then it sounds to some degree like you do have to bring the iron hand of government into it. I mean, if you want to create individual security accounts for people so that they do have a safety net, so that they can get sick and it's not the worst thing that ever happened, that seems like something government's going to do, unless Uber says, yes, I will do it, and Airbnb says, yes, I will do it too, and TaskRabbit says, I will do it too, which doesn't sound like it's on the horizon.
No, yeah, by Iron Man, a hand of government, I meant the, just really draconian types of regulations. I call it the visible hand of government. That's what we need. You know, most countries, developed countries, whether it's here in Europe or in Canada, Australia, they don't allow workers of different classifications to be treated so differently. So part-timers and freelancers and contract workers in these other developed countries, they have a lot more of a safety net beneath them. They have a lot more rights as workers than we have in the United States. And the reason we have it that way in the United States is for historical reasons. And yet I think now a lot of people are acknowledging that it's time for a change. So, you know, I think for Uber drivers, there's no reason why Uber shouldn't pay a little bit more beyond the wage that they earn into an individual security account for those drivers, so that they can have a safety net beneath them. I think that just makes sense for the economy that we're becoming.
Well, when you look at this broad picture that you've sketched out, tech companies making a ton of money on one side, and then on the other side, you've got people performing these services feeling like they're not getting the money that they deserve. Who wins? I mean, when you look forward a few years, who's going to win this battle?
I'm hopeful that we can come up with common sense regulation. Uber, I think, offers something. You know, in New York City, for example, there have been certain boroughs that where taxi service has been poor, and Uber has stepped in and done a decent job there. But in addition, these companies all need to treat their workers better and pay into something like an individual security account that would allow the workers in these different industries to have enjoy a safety net and preserve that part of the middle class that is very threatened right now. So I think, you know, with the right regulations, we have the chance of taking the good from the gig economy and helping that to flourish in a sense and getting rid of some of the bad. But it certainly will mean these companies will have to act much differently than they've been acting up to now. They're going to have to pay their taxes, follow the laws that exist, and, you know, maybe with tweaks to them to make them work for these sorts of services.
Stephen Hill is the author of Raw Deal, How the Uber Economy and Runaway Capitalism Are Screwing American Workers. He's a senior fellow at the New America Foundation and a Holtzbring Fellow at the American Academy in Berlin. Stephen Hill, thank you.
Thank you, Kara. It's been my great pleasure.